Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response from a day for the 28th of Adar. Today we're going to study a tshuva of Rav Herzog's about leaving machines running on Shabbat. It is from Heichal Yitzchak, Or Chaim Siman Yutet, the Or Chaim section, the 19th responsum, and it's from the 28th of Adar of Tavshin Yudbet of 1952. Which I feel like is like a remarkable year in halakhic history in Israel, because I feel like there's a bunch of things that I know from 1952. I think we've seen a bunch of tshuvot from there. The first volume of the Tzitzel Yezer's Hilchot Medina came out in 1952. Anyway, I think it was a remarkable time in halakhic history. And this is a response to a man named Rav Shlomo Zilkind Landers, who was a remarkable man in his own right. He was born in 1869 in the area of Minsk in Belarus, and he became a Rav, and he made Aliyah when he was 52 years old. So that, I think, A, leaves hope for those of us who have not yet made it to Israel. We can still make it. And inside from that, he also, in 1926, at the age of 57, became the first Rav of Ramat Gan. And then you think, well, you know, you're 56 years old, how long are you going to be a Rav for? He was a Rav for 36 years until his passing at the age of 92 or something like that. So he was 93. So he was an important figure. For a little while, he was a Rav of Bnei Brak as well. So by this point, 1952, though, he's an elderly man, and perhaps that's why he didn't want to handle it on his own. But he writes to Rav Herzog, who's the chief rabbi, and he also, will clearly see in the tshuva, he also wrote to Rav Uziel, who was the Sephardic chief rabbi. He wanted to know about the following question. There was a factory in Ramat Gan. It seems that it was making calcium, or it was making calcium to use in some other product. But it was making calcium for medicines, and as part of the making of these medications, there was a machine that it would use. So it would have a chemical process going on in the machine, and the question was whether they had to turn it off for Shabbat. So this is the way he says, I visited the factory with the owner, who he describes as a, you know, an Orthodox Jew, a Chared, who cares about mitzvot, so that if they tell him to do whatever it is, he'll listen to them. But not only that, that when he tells them about the operation of the factory, they have every right to believe him, because he's an Adam de Eman, he's a trustworthy person by virtue of his observance. So this is what he tells them. There's a machine which looks like a refrigerator, and it's got a clock that shows when it's going to work, when it's not going to work, when it's going to be on and off. And this machine is what causes another machine to work. And in that machine, you have various chemicals, and there's an automatic process going on in there, and it goes on day and night when it's working. And the machine that we're talking about puts the electric current into that, and that mixes together the chemicals until they make calcium. Now, he clearly can't mean they make calcium itself, because calcium is an element. I think he means they make the calcium for the medication they're going to be making, or for how they're going to mix it into other things. It's a process that takes 6 or 7 days, and the machine that does it without any input, meaning you don't have to start it every day, you don't have to turn it on, you have to turn it off, you have to transfer things, it goes on, and then you leave it, and when it's done, it stops on its own. So in other words, there's no need for the involvement of a human being, and that's important, because if you're going to leave it running on Shabbat, you might say that the worry is, well, a Jew's going to get involved if something goes wrong, or something happens, or if a process ends, he'll have to get the next process going, and we'll worry that he'll forget and do it. But the point is, the claim is, that none of that is necessary. That's the way the machines work. It starts, and then the process goes, and when it's done, it stops. And if something goes wrong, it just stops working. So there, too, you shouldn't have to worry that if something goes wrong, the Jew's going to be worried that he's going to be losing his money to get involved. You don't have to this. So there's no worry that the Jew's going to get involved in these kinds of things, and therefore it would seem like it should be okay maybe to leave it running on Shabbat. He also says there's no loud sounds. We're going to see in the tshuva, but this Rav Landers knows this as well, that you're not allowed to make loud noises from machines on Shabbat. It's something called Av Shemilta. Av Shemilta means that people will hear it and they'll think that the Jew is actually doing whatever it is that creates that noise in a Shabbos-violating kind of a way, and that problem is why you can't have loud noises, and therefore you'd have to worry about that. That's, by the way, something that people bring up, let's say, in the context of radios or TVs, to leave them running on Shabbat. There are those who have claimed, I think, that there's an Av Shemilta problem there, and that would be one of the issues. In this case, the claim is that it shouldn't be an Av Shemilta problem. It should be a problem of loud noises, because it's only a zimzum call. It's like a hum. Again, like a refrigerator. So just like we leave refrigerators running, and everybody knows that a refrigerator just runs, and we don't call that a problem of Avshin built on Shabbat, that should be true of this refrigerator, of this machine as well. And if you stop it before Shabbos, it's not like you stop it in the middle and say, well, let's take Shabbos off and then come back to it Motzei Shabbat. You can't do that because the chemicals that are in the processing will be ruined. They can't be stopped in the middle. Once the process starts, you have to start it. Now, theoretically, not that it comes up in this tshuva, but theoretically, you could say, well, if it's a process that takes 6 or 7 days, if it takes 7 days, you really have problems because it will always have to go over Shabbat. But let's say it takes only 6 days. Theoretically, you could say, well, start it every Sunday. But I think the answer is you can't always do that. And the timing doesn't always work. You don't always get the materials. You don't always have the needs. And, you know, if somebody makes an order on Tuesday, you're not going to say, well, I got to wait till next Sunday to start. Or you theoretically could, but it's not the most comfortable thing or the easiest thing to do. Now, part of the problem is it is well known that lots of people have automatic processes that go on, but many other machines, automatic processes of the kind that this guy in this factory has, many of the other ones have it. It's not as automatic as this one, meaning in their automation, if something goes wrong, a person has to step in to stop it. Now, there has to be supervision. So if they hear the sound in his factory, or if they know that it's running in his factory, they may not realize that he doesn't ever have to come in. He doesn't have to have employees come in because it needs no supervision. So, and if something goes wrong in the other ones, they'll have to stop it and have to get involved. Meaning, if something went wrong in his factory on a Shabbos, it would stop. Now, he would lose those chemicals, but that's all that he would lose, right? But in another factory, if you let it keep going, it would break the machinery, and that would be a much bigger loss, and therefore, people would have to step in to stop the damage from happening. So if people assume that about this Jew's factory, they'll assume that there's going to be supervisors there, he's going to be paying people, and then there might be people violating Shabbat to stop the machine. So you might have thought that that's a problem, that people will think that about him, that they're going to stop things, or they'll put in new chemicals on Shabbos, and things like that. So if we let him go, they won't understand the difference, and not only will they think that he's doing wrong, they might decide that that's okay, and they'll decide that other people can do it as well. So then the question is this a problem? And then aside from that, one of the problems, we have a general principle on Shabbat from a pasuk in Yeshayahu of Mimtso Cheftzcha V'Daber Davar, that we're not supposed to be doing anything non-Shabbos related on Shabbat. And so is it possible that leaving this running is a problem of letting our non-Shabbat needs being taken care of on Shabbat? And then Mr. Lenders writes, he says, and since this is a public issue, that's a very important point, right? Sometimes you ask a she'ela, you ask a question, and the question is, can I eat this food? So that's a question between me and Hashem, and whatever Rav I go to for the psak on that issue. So then the Rav can basket. But this Rav Landers, who's a well-established Rav, I mean, he's an old man by this time, and he certainly has thoughts on these issues, but he says, and I think it's interesting that he says, this isn't just an issue about this Jew and his business, and it, meaning if he was in his house, in his basement, and the question was, let's say, is there some setup of a phone that he could use? That's a private question that this Rav, I think, would have felt comfortable answering. But here it's a question of, will a factory run on Shabbos? And if the factory will be allowed to run, what ramifications will it have for other people who want to run their factories on Shabbos? So therefore, it's a broad, I don't like this term because it's often used in a negative way, but I think it is. It's a broad policy question. It's, as we think about these halachic issues, it's going to affect much more than this narrow case. And we have to take all those factors into account. And therefore, he doesn't want to paskin it on his own, and therefore he's turning, he says it in the plural, but I think he just means him, but he's turning to, so it's really to Rav Uziel and to Rav Herzog, one of the chief rabbis of the state of Israel in the early state, and he wants to know what's the psak of this factory, which he throws in at the end is closed all of Shabbat. Nobody ever goes in there, right? Because the machines are completely automatic, so you can't even worry about that. So that's what he says. So that's the question. That's from the 28th of Adar. That's what led us to be able to listen to it and learn it on this day. Before I get to the answer, I want to mention that the 28th of Adar means that Nisan is coming up, and if you'll pardon me, and if you don't like this, I fully understand and I apologize in advance, but I do want to make a slight plug for a book that I wrote last year that I think is very worthwhile reading, and the reading starts on the first of Nisan. It's a set of daily readings from the first of Nisan through the end of Pesach. It's called As If We Were There, Readings for a Transformative Pesach. If you have been listening to my shiurim, and I appreciate that you do, and you think that I might have something else to say about Pesach, which I hope I had something constructive and productive to say, then please feel free to get hold of a copy of As If We Were There, Readings for a Transformative Passover Experience. I would love it if you'd buy, you know, 5 copies of it and give it out to friends. And I guarantee you that it's not really a financial issue for me. I don't make any or almost any money off of this. It's more a question of, I had ideas that I think are useful and productive for Jews who want to serve Hashem better, and I try to find ways to bring those to people's attention. So if you have a chance to get the book, I would love it. If you have a chance to get the book and give it to other people to read, I would love it. And if you have reactions to the book or to anything that I do, I'd love to hear from you. grothst@gmail.com. Okay, so Rav Herzog doesn't answer for a while. His answer is dated the Chavtet LaOmer, so he took almost 6 weeks to answer. He's a busy man. He's the chief rabbi of Israel. So he brings up a couple of halachic issues that we think about in Shabbos terms to consider whether or not these are issues that are of concern for us. The first one is, there's a question of, can you put wheat or any grain that needs to be ground, really, into a mill before Shabbos? Meaning, already in the time of the Gemara, and in the time of the Halacha, you'd have mills that were run by water. So meaning you'd have a water wheel in a river, and as the water wheel turned, it would turn the mill, and the mill would work on the grain that had been put into it. So that grain would slowly be ground over Shabbos. The question is, can you fill up a mill with, can you fill up the place where it's going to be milled in with grain that needs to be milled, and then leave it over Shabbat? So that's one issue that he wants to bring up, and then we're going to get into other issues as we go along. So the Rambam Pasuk in Hilchos Shabbos, beginning of the third chapter, that you're allowed to start a malacha in general. You're allowed to start a malacha on Erev Shabbat, even though it's going to finish on its own on Shabbat. This isn't true. There are many exceptions to this for various other reasons. But if the only question is, I'm going to start a malacha Erev Shabbat, it's going to continue into Shabbat, there are no other issues that come up. So, for example, what about a washing machine? So, a washing machine is a problem of Af Shemilta, because people will think that people hear the washing machine running and they might think you started on Shabbos. So I think that's one of the issues. And then there's a Liban issue, because then if you take it out to dry, you put it out to dry, there's all sorts of issues that are tangent to, that are ancillary to, that are on the side of the original question. But if I just have a malacha, which the only question is a malacha that starts in Erev Shabbat, so, and it's going to finish on its own on Shabbat, am I allowed to do that? And the answer the Rambam says is yes, because the prohibitions of Shabbat really only apply Ba'at Moshe Yom. So anytime you hear of something that we're not allowed to start Erev Shabbat, and it goes into Shabbat, that means it's some other issue that comes up, and therefore you have to investigate what that other issue is. But as a fundamental question, you're allowed to start things on Erev Shabbat that will go into Shabbat. And then if it finishes on Shabbat, we're allowed to get benefits, says the Rambam. So if that's true, why is it that you can't put the wheat, we say in Halacha, you can't put the wheat into the mill? That's because it's mashma'at kol. It makes a noise. The people hearing the noise will think that you started out on Shabbos, and that's what we have to worry about. So since this case of this factory doesn't have any sound, it's only that low hum like a refrigerator, Kedivrei HaRav of Beis Din Raman Kan, the leader of Raman Kan is Rav Landers, as he says. It's not an Af Shemilta problem. And even if it didn't make a louder noise, there are opinions that hold that's allowed anyway. The Ramaran in the Beis Yosef, the Rav Shulchan Aruch in the Beis Yosef seems to think so. And when the Ramah comes to disagree, he says, though, V'lo chayshin l'hashmat, he disagrees about some other factor, but the Hashmat Kol isn't the biggest deal according to Rama, and this machlokas we've shown him about this in the Tosfos, and therefore, since it's only a suffix, it's a doubt about whether that's a problem, and it's a suffix in a drabbanan, right? So let's think of the halachic construct that we have here in front of us. We have the question is, are you allowed to start before Shabbos? The answer is you're generally allowed to start before Shabbos. The only reason why you're not allowed to start with wheat in a mill before Shabbos is the mill makes noise, people hear the noise, and they'll think the wrong thing. Here, you don't have hashmat kol, really. And even if you did have Hashmat Kol, there are many opinions that say that it should be okay anyway. So it seems to be Machloka Rishonim about a din derabbanan, about a rabbinic prohibition of not making noises that will lead people to think the wrong thing. So if that's true, then it's a Sveika derabbanan lekula, right? Because it's a rabbinic issue. We have a debate among the Rishonim about it. We don't know what the halacha is about it. That sounds like a safek derabanan. It's a doubtful situation in a rabbinic prohibition. We generally say safek derabanan lekula. The problem here that makes it a little more complicated is that this safek was called a sveika didina, right? So usually a safek is, I don't know what the case is. But sometimes what a safek is, I know what the halacha is. Right? I know exactly what the case is, but I know what the halacha is. So that's called a sveika didina. So in a sveika didina, where I don't know what the halacha is, and I have a debate among Rishonim, there are those who hold that there, even if it's a drabbana, we should be machmir. We should follow the strict opinion So even so, says Rav Herzog, but we don't have to because we follow the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat, in the Ramah, and in the Ramah, says that in Sfeika Dedina, in the Rabbanah, we follow the Kula. So those are some of the issues that could have come up so far, which don't seem to be a problem. One issue would have been to say that you can't start things before Shabbos to continue on Shabbos. We don't hold that way. We hold that the prohibitions of Shabbos for Jews are only those that are on Shabbos themselves. In the case of wheat being put into a mill, there's another issue that comes up, the question of the sound, the noise. For this factory, it seems like there isn't enough noise for that to be a problem. Even if you thought there was enough noise to be a problem, there's room to say that you can ignore it because there are Rishonim who hold that it's not a problem, that we don't care about noise, it's a problem. That would be a Sfeika Derabanan. You'd say Lekula. So you say no, maybe it's a Sfeika Dedina. So the answer is no. Even though it's a debate, it's not a debate about the case, it's a debate about the halacha, we still say Sfeika Derabanan Lekula, that's the way we paskin. So that teaches us broad halachic principles as well about suffix, about when we have cases of doubt. There are doubts in the facts and there are doubts of the law. Right, so in both cases, if it's a Rabbanan case, we rule Sfeika Derabanan Lekula, even though there's holds who hold other ways. But where there is a problem is the Magen Avraham in Siman Yud says that we don't engineer situations, we don't allow ourselves to create Sfeika Derabanan. Where will then go Lekula? Right, so it's one thing if a Sfeika Derabanan arises, if a doubt arises about a halacha that's a rabbinic halacha, then we can say, well, we'll pass on the kula, we'll rule the kula. But to set up a situation like here, let's assume that there's going to be noise, and there we shouldn't hold that the noise is okay, in fact, on Shabbos, so we don't have to worry about that. And so therefore, we could run the factory, but that would only be true if we're running the factory and then the noise happens. We could say, or if we, right, but if we're going to say, no, you can run the factory in general, even though there's noise, that's engineering our lives to get into a subject job on it. Then we're going to run hell that we can't do that. So Rav Herzog says, well, but here I think we can say that there's a great value to this because it's producing medications, and medications are important for people's healings, and there's a loss in stopping the malacha on Shabbos work of malacha, and so that's called a shatat kach. It's a situation of great pressure. It's called a hefsed meruba. There's great financial loss, and in those situations, like a bidiyevet, it's like it's already happened, right? That the word bidiyevet really means, as I've said many times, that the situation has already happened. We're trying to figure out how to react to it. That's what really bidiyevet means. If somebody comes to you and says, you know, I think I can do this because it's okay bidiyevet, that's not actually a valid claim. There's no such thing as okay bidiyevet. Bidiyevet always means if after the fact I come to you and I say, what's the halacha? I can say, well, bidiyavad, when it's already been done, I can rule X or Y, we can rule X or Y or Z way. But, as Herzog is pointing out, there are situations in halacha where we say it's already like it's bidiyavad, such as the ones that he's named here. If it's a time of great pressure, for whatever reason, there are lots of ways that pressure can be created, or it's going to be a great loss. So even though we haven't done it yet, it's already like a bidiyavad situation, like a already done situation, and therefore it would seem like we can paskin lekula and allow this factory to run, even though, as we just saw, there is some reason to think that you wouldn't be allowed. The reason to think you wouldn't be allowed was you're getting yourself into a sfeika derabanan. And to get yourself into a Sfeika Derabanan, the Magen Avraham says we're not supposed to do, as a policy matter, as a halakhic policy matter, we're not supposed to get it, we're not allowed to get ourselves a Sfeika Derabanan. But here, since it's a Shabbat Chak and Hefsed Meruba, it is a time of pressure and there's a lot of loss, a great financial loss, and it's a needed quality, meaning if he was just making, you know, televisions, it's unclear that Rav Herzog would have agreed the same way, even for the exact other, if everything else about the situation were the same thing, Rav Herzog might say, well, you don't need TV so much, but here it's about medication that people need, and therefore he thinks there's room to be lenient. Now Rav Herzog refers to a comment that Rav Uziel had made in his answer to this question. Rav Uziel had said that it's a problem, Rav Uziel thought it was a problem, that in a factory like this, he says, it's got to be that you're going to have people there on Shabbos watching over what's going on. And so Rav Uziel said, you got to make sure they're not Jews. Now, it's a little odd to me because I think in the question, I don't think we just saw it together, but in the question, the Rav from Ramat Gan, this Rav Lander, says that nobody goes in on Shabbat. So Rav Uziel seems to think that that's hard to imagine, right? It's not, you've got machinery running, you've got stuff running. It can't be that people are going to leave it completely unsupervised. And I don't know what the truth is about the situation, but let's assume that Rav Uziel is right. So Rav Uziel says it can't be a Jew because we have a tradition that you shouldn't have a Jew doing that. And you have a Shulchan Aruch HaTanya, meaning the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. One of the outstanding characters was that he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. It was early in Chassidut, and some of the early figures of Chassidut, it wasn't clear what their level of Torah knowledge was. But the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, his name was Zalman Miliadi, was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he wrote he called it a Shulchan Aruch HaRav, or he called it a Shulchan, I don't know what he called it, but it's known as Shulchan Aruch HaRav, and it's got a completely different order, different setup than our Shulchan Aruch. It was like an independent new work. And I think Lubavitcher's consulted halachically to our times. So there he wrote that in situations like this, you cannot have a Jew be watching something on Shabbos, name Marita Ayin, because it'll look bad. What will look bad? It'll look like he's a messenger of the Jews, and he's getting paid or sent by the Jew to watch over things on Shabbat, which isn't a real Shabbat activity. That's the way Raziel had commented on the issue. And Rav Hertzog says, I'm not sure I understand why that's true. We have Halacha and Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Mem Dalin. Then in a taxes case, or where you're worried that people are going to steal from you, that a person can watch on Shabbos, can watch his items, or go to watch his field and things like that to make sure they don't steal from him. So Rav Hertzog says, I don't understand. What's the problem if he's a shliach of the original Jew, since the original Jew could have done it too, right? That the Rav Hertzog understands the Shulchan Aruch and Reish Mem Dalin to say that on Shabbat, if you have a worry that people are going to steal from you, you can watch over things. You can just sit and watch things that belong to you, and that's not a violation of Shabbat. So why should it be a problem here? And especially since in the Kuntres Akron and the Shulchan Aruch, there in various parts of Shulchan Aruch, you'll have at the end of a set of halachot, like a closing discussion by some rav, and it's published there. I think it's different ones at different times, I think, but I haven't checked that carefully. So there, he discusses when the Shulchan Aruch says you can watch things on Shabbat, does it have to be items which, if they were stolen, would create a hefsed merubah, would create a great loss or not? And one of the issues, though, is even if each particular instance would, let's say I run a penny candy store, and if I leave it on Shabbos and I don't supervise it, people will come in and they'll take a little piece of candy, right? A little, a 5-cent piece of candy there, or a 10-cent piece of candy there. It's not hefsed merubah, but if everybody knows that every Shabbos, nobody's around and they can come in, so over the course of time, as they used to say about the U.S. Congress, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money. So here, in Hefsed Merubah questions, if I'm never going to watch my items on Shabbat, I have no system of supervision to stop people from stealing from me, then it'll eventually be a lot. So that seems to say that it's a Hefsed Merubah, you can do it for sure. So Rav Hertzog says, so I don't understand why Rav Uziel is worried about that, because it seems to be here, it's a Hefsed Merubah question. So the owner could have done it. If the owner could have done it, then who cares if another Jew does it, because that Jew can be a shliach of the owner, because it's a permissible thing to do, because there's a hefsed merubah if you don't have somebody watching. So that he doesn't understand that issue, and he thinks that shouldn't be thought of as an issue. But there is another issue, he says, because we should worry. Well, let's say something goes wrong. So you've told me it's completely automatic, you don't have to get in and do anything about it, but maybe he will. And maybe you'll be tempted to. So, as an example, not an example that he gives, but an example if you think about it. So they said that if something goes wrong, the machine just stops. Okay? But they also said you can't stop in the middle of the process because it'll lose a lot. You'll lose money. It'll all be ruined. But what if the machine stops and there's some easy way to fix it, but a Shabbos violation way? There's some easy way to fix it and not lose that money and get the process going up again. Right? So that's a problem. But Rav Hertzog is not sure that we are required to worry about that, especially since the violation of Shabbat would then be an Isser of Torah. So it's true that we generally say, and he says it somewhere here too, that people will not control themselves when they see they're about to lose a lot of money, and they'll do things even if it's a violation of Shabbos. But nonetheless, he thinks it's not clear that you have to do that. So he thinks this whole question might be depend on a debate among Rishonim, and I'm mentioning it just because I think the debate is an interesting debate to think about, to realize comes up as the process of halacha has a lot of underlying questions that come up again and again in various forms and various contexts. And those questions aren't about a specific question, is this meat kosher or not? Can I do this on Yom Kippur, right? Can I act this way on Shabbat? Am I required to do this with my lulav? It's broad questions that come up over and over again about how we construct and understand the world. So here's an example of it. When there's a suffix shel Torah, when there is a doubt about whether we have a Torah obligation, either Torah prohibition or a Torah obligation, we're not sure. So that's called a suffek d'oraita. So we generally say, as we said, the opposite of what we said now, suffek d'rabbanan l'kula, right? In rabbinic cases, we say we go leniently. In Torah cases, we go stringently. Suffek d'oraita l'chumra. There is, however, a machloket rishonim, a debate among rishonim, about whether that principle itself is a rabbinic principle or is a Torah principle. Did the Torah require, meaning when I have a doubtful situation, there's two ways to go, right? I don't know if I put on tefillin today yet or not. The Torah obligation, I don't know if I did. Am I required to worry about it and put them on again just in case? So you can say, well, might as well. Okay, maybe I might as well if it's easy to do. Let's say it's not easy to do. Should I think of it as I have an obligation or not? That's not an obvious issue, right? Let's say some doubt arises about some food. I don't know that it's kosher. It might not be kosher on a total level. So the question of whether I have to worry about it, I have reason to think that it's kosher. I have some reason to think it's not kosher. What do I do? So the principle that we have to treat it as if it's not kosher, we have to be machmir, we have to be stringent, that's a principle, right? So that's a fine principle, but is that a principle that the Torah itself set up? Could be. Or it could be not. It could be the Torah only meant, if you know that you're doing the wrong thing, don't do it. If you know that you have to do something, do it. But if you have legitimate doubts, then you don't have to worry about it. Right, so that's a machlok rishonim. That's a debate among the rishonim as to whether the Torah set that up or it's a derabbanan that set up. If it's a derabbanan, sorry, if it's a doraita principle, if it's a biblical principle, there's reason to think that that would be true in a rabbinic issue as well. That even though we say sfigah derabbanan lekula, but there would be room to say that you should be machmir because it's a Torah. But the Torah principle is if you don't know for sure that you're doing the right thing, you shouldn't be doing it. Right, you should do the thing to be sure you're doing the right thing. You might have thought. Then we should apply that to Rabbanan as well, because otherwise it'll sort of cast doubt on the Doraita. In any case, he goes into that a little bit further. That's not so relevant to our case, because we do end up saying Sfeikah Rabbanan the Kula, and he thinks that we can stick with that. Then gets back to something else Uziel had said. He says, from a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, like we started out, that you shouldn't put wheat into the water mill, the mill that's run by a water wheel, on Shabbos. And he goes through that discussion, that Yerushalmi. It's not so relevant to us, I think, because Uziel apparently brings it up. I'm not looking at the tshuva of Uziel now. We're just doing Rav Herzog's tshuva, because the opinion that says you can't do it is, there's two opinions why you can't do it. Rav Yossi and Rav Yibun says there, because we're worried about sheshocheach v'tokeach hayated. You're going to put in a piece to the process. You're going to put in like a piece of equipment in the process. That's like a problem in establishing the machinery that it should work well. But that's what the Yerushalmi has. But in the Bavli, in Gemara and Shabbos on Daf Yudchet Amid Bet, so Rabbah quotes that bright, and he says it's Beit Hillel's position, and Beit Hillel's position is because it's only about a Rechaim Shalmayim, it's a water mill, because it makes a lot of noise. And then it quotes Rav Yossi Bar Yibun, who says, no, it's Beit Hillel, but the problem is, worried about you sticking in, you know, the pole or the tent pole or whatever it is that will keep it going in that way, and that he thinks that's the problem. Because that would be a real malacha of like building and completing the machinery. Or that you might put in the wheat actually on Shabbos, because once you get used to fiddling with it, you'll do an actual thing. But the problem is, and this is why I think he's sort of obliquely saying that he thinks he doesn't know why Raziel brought that up, because we don't paskin, he says. We don't paskin like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Boon, because there's no Rishonim who mentioned that. All the Rishonim who understand that halacha about the mill to be a question on the noise that it makes. We always paskin like the Baal. Right? You could say, well, the Yerushalmi has only Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Boon, but we don't paskin like the Yerushalmi when we have a Bavli that brings up that issue. So even if you said to me, and this is part of what Raziel was trying to say, even if you said to me that it's common for something to break, and then when it's common for something to break, we should worry about the view of Ruz Yibiribibun, and we should say, don't run it on Shabbos because you might end up trying to fix it. And the water mill was around that, since there are certain machines where, as part of the ordinary working of the machinery, you're supposed to do something to add something to it and stuff like that. So in those situations, it's a problem. Maybe you'd say it's a problem because you're going to end up doing that thing on Shabbos as well, and that will be a violation of Shabbos. So maybe you would have thought that here about this machinery that you say it's so likely to break, or you think it's likely enough to break, that it should be a worry. But the Herzog saying is, I don't see the sugyos that way, because we don't possibly have Yosef Ribbon in any kind of way that I know of. So why didn't the Bavli worry about it, says Rav Herzog? He says he thinks it's because it wasn't common enough with the water mill. Over milta de lo shricha, this is a general principle that we've had before, and that comes up a lot. And a milta de lo shricha, when you have an uncommon case, the Rabbana didn't make a gzera. When the rabbis created gzera, when they created halachot and rules and ordinances and whatever's, they made it for common cases. So when you have an uncommon case, you won't have to worry about it, and therefore it won't apply. So here too, you'd have to check. So if it's true that it breaks down a lot, and whenever it breaks down, there's a big loss that goes up. So then you'd have to worry about it, even though the guy said, remember, the guy had said it never breaks, and even if it breaks, it just stops, and you just leave, you have to touch it. But if it stops and you leave it and you don't have to touch it, except that it happens often, and you're going to lose a whole batch of chemicals. And not only are you going to lose that batch of chemicals, but you'll have to start the process over again. You'll have delivery problems. If that's all true, then there's room to say that you should worry that people are not willing to undergo that kind of loss, especially if it comes up again and again. And you just have to worry that whoever's there will forget and will try to salvage the loss and avoid the loss. And that will lead to a Shabbos violation, then you'd have a problem. Then there's a question of maybe building the machine. If you're going to add a piece or take away a piece of it, right, that's part of the process, like it was with the water bill, with Tokeh Yatein. Putting in the Yatein, you might say that's only if you're going to do it in a permanent fashion, because then it's Boneh, or it's Makeh B'Patish, it's finishing up a piece of machinery. If that were true in this factory as well, you'd have that worry as well. In any case, coming back to our situation, he says, it doesn't seem like that's an issue so much, because the claim is that the machinery is set up on its own, you don't have to do that. And then also you'd have to worry that about other factories. So therefore, he thinks that they're not as automatic, and you'd have to worry about that. So you have to check with the Rav of Ramat Gan, who's there. He can know the situation, and therefore he agrees with in the end of Uziel that if there's a local council of rabbis, as there is, they should bring in the important rabbis in the council. They should sit together. They should look at the Chivot of Rav Uziel and Rav Herzog, and they should learn them and understand all the situations. And if they think that it's okay and that we can follow the opinion that we don't care about the noise, or that and that we don't have to worry about the noises, and that the issue of a water mill is not relevant here, then we'll go along with them and we'll allow it. And so he leaves it up to them, although he's expressed his opinion, and that leaves us with a Shiva a day for the 28th of Adar, and a reminder of several important halakhic principles when it comes to Shabbat, which the questions of automatic activity and how we can or cannot use it on Shabbat. Have a great day.